The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
G better than a more, never been the floor. Pretty kitty, manicure claws, silly, never been a drawer. When the purr, Betty, when the pour, cause a stir when she on the floor. Giving in the oar, champagne always on the pour. Some happy, others can applaud. Bum bitches, like you better.
Welcome everyone to my brand new series with help from other people who I'll introduce later. Drag is the New Spandex with your host, Oral. That's me. Okay, so going around the room and then skipping over some because we want to do this right and proper. We've got Pat. Hi, Pat.
What's going on, Oral?
Nothing much. I'm so excited to be here.
I am too.
Okay. And we also have Brian, who happens to be Pat's partner, for those of you who don't remember. Hi, Brian.
Oh, hey. How's it going?
Good, good. Okay, so everyone, we're starting this new series where I get to be the host and we get to talk about the good, the bad, and the tragic. And we've decided to call this new podcast Drag is the New Spandex. Why is that, Brian?
Well, a long time ago, I was watching a porn, and the porn was called Queer is the New Black, or Gay is the New Black, or Porn is the New Black. Anyway, it was some variation on that. And the guy actually sang his whole song, which if I can find, is going to be in this episode. I just gotta look for it. Anyway, so that expression kind of rooted in my brain, and then for years, you know, back there percolating, and then Orange is the New Black just came out.
Which is a fantastic show.
You know, about lesbian prison people. Mm-hmm. And Captain Janeway and all those crazy people.
So great.
And the guy from American Pie. Anyway, and I, of course, have been talking to a few of our friends who are in the drag world and thought, you know what? I want a place we can tell their story and they can tell their story. And so that's what this series is going to be. It's going to be all about drag culture, drag queens from their own mouths.
Which is so much fun. And you chose me to host the show because I guess I'm the biggest queen of them all in the group.
Exactly.
Okay, yay me.
Well, and you have that alter ego that sort of sometimes runs around and does RuPaul. You
know. I am not Dita Ritz. I don't really sound
until
like Dita Ritz.
Until we get both of you in the same room together, I just don't know.
Okay, so our first premiere, fantastic guest, can be seen performing.
She'll talk all about where she's performing.
Okay,
so you don't have to worry about that.
So I would like to introduce to Drag is the New Spandex, our first guest ever. Illustrious first guest, Chantel Roche.
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm cocktailed.
Okay, me too. Everybody.
That's the best way to start it off.
Isn't it? And this time, I don't have any mouthy people going under pseudonyms telling me I drink too much.
Chantel is here, but you know, this is not her first time on our show.
It's not?
No. In fact,
I forgot about that.
He who shall not be named currently, but is actually Joshua. Mm-hmm. And I did a little episode of Flame On called Flame On Goes Out or Flame On Night Out.
I remember that.
And we interviewed a couple people in the sort of the courtyard of Parliament, and Chantel was one of them. So her second appearance on this show, but you know, this is the proper I think origin story sort of appearance.
Yeah.
Which I should point out, that's why it's spandex. To me, and this is our take on it, drag is the new superhero. So they have fabulous outfits, they have alter egos or secret identities in some cases, mm-hmm. and they fight in tolerance and other evil in nightclubs and bars and restaurants on weekends.
And don't forget their fierce competitors in pageants.
Oh, well, there's that too. So anyway, without further ado, sorry.
I'll just let y'all talk. I'll just sit here enjoying my, what am I drinking? Planter's Punch.
Planter's Punch.
Just keep it correct because the viewers can't see that. I'll tell them what I'm enjoying.
Okay, so this is going to be really like fast and loose, which is Pat's favorite way of doing anything. So tell us about yourself. Like, tell us about yourself and tell us how you got into drag.
Well, it started back in the 1900s. I won't tell you which decade because I'll give away my age. But I was born and raised in Iowa.
Okay.
Which started all off. And actually, I grew up in a very, what is I would consider today, normal household because I had very dysfunctional parents, which is sad to say it's normal, but it is. It's what it is. And I had a very strong mother who truly believed that she needed to be my mother first before she became my friend. So education was very strong. I didn't have a lot of freedoms to be stupid.
Mm-hmm.
My mother really did raise us to be educated and, you know, to seek out our dreams, but do it practically. One of the things I remember my mother saying is, don't invest too much time in dance. It won't get you anywhere in life. She wanted me to be a businessman. You know, I suppose my father wanted to be a jock. Well, they both kind of missed the boat on that one. But I did go to Iowa State, and I graduated from Iowa State with a degree in commercial recreation, which I had a lot of training in national parks and recreational facilities. Anytime you want to spend money to have fun, that's the leisure service industry.
Okay.
On top of that, I had a minor in marketing, and I thought for sure I was going to run some city's park and recreation program.
Kind of like Leslie Snow.
Who'd that be?
Parks and Rec?
I don't watch that show.
Okay.
Oh, you would enjoy it, I think.
It's not a reality show. I'm a Real Housewives.
Oh, girl.
I'll be the first to admit it. I like good trash TV when I can actually watch it.
Hey, in his house.
I was going to say. But I got it to get me to Florida because I had to get out of Iowa. Iowa was a great place to grow up as a youth. Once I started becoming to more of the gay youth, at that time, it was still just not the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I got an internship with Walt Disney World, came to Disney, started out my first career there in the ice cream parlor scooping ice cream and working all the popcorn and ice cream wagons. And that's where I met DJ Brianna Lee. I was about 4 inches shorter back then, if you can imagine that. And to clean the freezers in the ice cream parlor, they were like about 3 gallon jugs deep. And I sat there and said, oh, I got this. I don't need anybody to help me. I was, you know, I had a little bit of that machoism anyway. So I would take a tub of sudsy water, hot sudsy water, dump it into this empty freezer, plug the hole, and then I would turn myself over upside down and I'm doing a handstand in the bottom of this freezer. I would be cleaning it out. So all you would see are two little tiny legs sticking out the top.
Oh my God.
Brianna was told one night, go help Robert over in the cone shop clean. So when she walked in looking for me, all she saw were these two legs sticking up. From then, we became quick friends, and she was in the finals at the Parliament House and said, you should come and watch. And I didn't have a lot of local friends then, so I said, okay. Came into the Parliament House. This was one of my first times being there, scared to death. Sat in the theater with her brother and his partner, and she came out and did Vitamin and Vegemin, and I thought that was cute. And then I started thinking I could do that. So she and her brother, who also did drag, got me up in the face, and we did our first talent show there, and we were first runner-up. Didn't win any money, but got qualified for finals. When finals, we were second runner-up. Didn't win any money. But I sat there and said, okay, let's try this one more time. We went to this little bar called Fantasies that isn't around anymore. And I won that night. So with my third week of doing drag, I won a talent contest. They gave me $50 cash. And at that moment when they handed me that money, I said, it would take me 8 hours at Disney to make this money. And I just did it in 5 minutes.
Wow.
And when you first start thinking along those lines, it was almost a survival mechanism. I found a way to make the path easier as I built my career at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, all of a sudden, there became a power with it. And there was a lot of self-esteem issues I had as a child and growing up about not thinking I was pretty, not thinking I was cute. And all of a sudden, you put on makeup and a wig and you're pretty. Even if you're not pretty, if you're the ugliest busted queen out there, someone's going to tell you you're pretty. And we see that quite a bit.
Not naming any names at this point.
See, there'd be too many to name. You still have a chance.
Oh, wow. So I had no idea your drag mother. So DJ Brianna Lee is your drag mother.
I give her all props. A lot of people will say your drag mother's who, you know, is. A lot of people like to make their drag mother whoever's the most prominent, who is the most famous. I've had a lot of people help me along the way. Geraldine Jones, Kim Ross, may she rest in peace. Dana Douglas, may she rest in peace. Shay Shay Larisse. Danielle Hunter, Denise Russell. I've had a lot of people help me, and helping me by taking me to their houses, giving me makeup lessons, giving me hair lessons, giving me a advice on styling, but the person who started me, who sat there and took me completely raw and said, I just want you to experience this culture and enjoy this culture, was DJ Brown Lee. So to this day, anybody who enjoys me needs to thank her, because without her, I never would have started.
Wow. And recently you put up, you partook in the Throwback Thursday on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. No?
So there was the picture from, that was your first night in drag, right?
And I bought my everything at the, oh God, what store was it? I think it was at the 579 store. Back when I was a 579, now I'm more like a 10, 12, 14. But yeah, no, I bought that simple little jumper outfit and the bodysuit, and I had my cute little Whitney Houston hair and my Divine makeup and my size A titty cups in. And when you're going from boy to girl, the slightest changes you think are all the vavoom you need. And I remember looking in the mirror that night going, look at my figure. I'm so gorgeous. Now today I'm looking at, look at those little baby boobs you're wearing.
Question about your Whitney hair. Now, was it... album was it? Was it Whitney Houston debut with the bun, or was it like free forming? I gotta beat Madonna.
It wasn't that I want to dance with somebody mermaid.
No, no.
It wasn't the bun. It was the short curly pop top. This kind of like a mushroom.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I got
that
it.
That one.
I got it. Whitney's my patron diva. May she rest in peace. Girl, I missed you. It was the day I saw the B-52s in concert was the day she died, and I waited all my life to watch them, and then they're like, Whitney Houston died. I'm like, don't play with me. That's not funny. And I checked my phone.
In the concert?
No. I got a text message from my friend, and he's like, you know, your people are dropping like flies. First Michael, then Whitney. I'm like, don't play with me. That's not funny. Then my other friend's like, girl, I'm so sorry. I hope you're sitting down. Literally screamed, dear God, not Whitney too, in the middle of like Mardi Gras. Anyway, I digress.
That was a sad moment.
Ooh, I cried. I had to run to the arms of a man I shouldn't have. Ooh, I just needed somebody to hold me through the night.
Oh, Lord. He wanted to dance with somebody.
I'm thankful that she finally, but right before she passed, she got herself rebaptized in the River Jordan.
She did. She did. Yeah. And I'm glad she went out real classy, not with those street level drugs like Crystal.
What did she go out on?
Baby, I don't know if being in a tub found dead is real classy.
I was going to say, with the whole baptism
Beverly Hills
thing.
Hotel.
Yeah. Is it wrong to say that she baptized herself a third time?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
It is too soon, bitch.
Too soon.
It is, you know what? Before we run off the rails and I have to slap bitches left and right. Chantel, you were telling us about your drag origin story. I have a question. Okay, so yes. What was that first transformation like? Like, what was the hardest part? What sticks out most foremost in your mind?
Let me tell you, there was nothing hard about that transformation. What was hard was going back. There's a strange power and a strange social acceptance for drag queens, and especially in this area, where I didn't like who I was. I had spent years upon years of being told I was nothing, I was worthless, I was a fag, I was this, that, the other. And I've been doing that with Iowa, you know, in the middle of Iowa, I was dealing with this. My worst morning in high school, and it is the stupidest thing, but I was sitting across from one of my girlfriends. We were just sitting there having a good morning. It was before classes started. And of course, the table across the way were like 10 of the worst, most abusive guys in the school. And I was eating some sort of cream-filled donut, and I took a bite of the donut and a piece of cream. I laugh now because I'm an adult and I understand what they're saying. I was a virgin at the time, and a piece of cream had ended up on the side of my on the corner of my mouth, and these guys started screaming at me, "Wipe the fucking cum off your face, you faggot." And I went in my book, and I'm just like not even looking at them. I know it's happening. I'm in sheer panic. I don't know how else to handle myself. I'm endured this for 15 minutes, this onslaught of comments, and I didn't realize that no one knew that I was hearing them. They all thought I was so in the book that I wasn't hearing them, and that's why I kept coming. And then when the warning bell rang for everybody to go to classes, they all got up, and I had this sigh of relief. And my girl looked at me, she's like, did you even hear what they were saying? I'm like, I heard every word. She's like, I didn't even think you were listening to them because you just were so quiet, and that's why they kept going. It was one of the worst days in high school I can remember. And you know, when you endure those sort of things day after day, you know, a good day for me in high school was only being called faggot twice. That was a good day. To go from that and realizing these people have molded you and whittled your self-perception down to that you're nothing, and then you put on hair and makeup and everybody tells you you're beautiful and they want to talk to you and they want to listen to you, it becomes intoxicating and demoralizing at the same time, because when you start to embrace the fake side of you, the illusion side of you, you lose a little bit of who you are. And it takes you a while to make the two become harmoniously together. And my friends are looking at me going, damn, bitch, I didn't know you were this deep.
No, this very is real. This is so awesome, because to me, so many people who are into comics grew up the same way. Whether they were picked on because they were gay, or they're picked on because they were nerdy, because they were a marching band. Maybe I'm just talking about myself. I don't know.
Yeah, I was just about to say, the life and times of Brian.
Listen.
For the record, I was a baton twirler and captain of my squad my senior year. That did not help my high school reputation. But I was fierce with a baton.
So, but I mean, that escapist nature of what we did in high school to try to deal with the crap that people threw at us, the names, the social anxiety, all the crap, that then we find these venues, whether that's superhero comics for some of us, drag for some of us, both in some cases, like that we can find this path to get out of that. And I will say that now those experiences were so formative to us that we are so amazing and like hardened, and not hardened in a bad way, but like honed. Like, that's really cool to me. It's almost like I think I had this thought the other day, because we were listening to something on the radio, and I was like, man, I almost, if I had children, I'd almost want them to have the same terrible experiences like, you know, you and I've had. Or
you're going through the crucible, little Billy.
Yeah, because it makes you, I mean, you hear all these very successful people, and they almost all across the board, they weren't the jocks. They weren't the successful class presidents. Well, they were the ones that were picked on.
Well, a big part of that is, when it comes down to it, really, is the fact that that's what shapes you and makes you a stronger person. If you don't go through any of those trials and tribulations, if you just walk through life and you're just sitting there kind of getting everything handed to you, when the shit hits the fan, you're done. You buckle under that pressure and you don't know how to handle it. When you go through it at a younger age, and you know, I went through shit, I'm nowhere near as bad as that. I kind of kept my head down through a lot of it, but you know, a lot of the shit that you go through is what makes us the stronger people that we are and what makes us successful. We actually had talked about this, and kind of going back to like getting out of drag and the dual identities, when we met, for the most part, we met with you as a boy, and then, you know, getting to know you and you becoming a really close friend of ours, then it kind of became a matter of, okay, well, we've got Rob, and then we've got Chantel. And for me, I don't know what it is, but I always try to distinguish like boy name versus girl name. When you are in drag, you are that person, that character, that part of you, almost like it's like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type of thing. And it took me a little while we were kind of coming up with this whole premise. And I think I said it to you at the bar one night, and growing up reading comics, the superheroes always had their secret identity. And that was the biggest secret that they could keep. Nobody knew who they were. When they went out, they were in their spandex, they were in their costume, they had their masks on, you know, most of them had a mask, so they were that person. They were Spider-Man. They had these costumes, and then they would, you know, go into their private lives, and you know, now they're just walking around, and you can call them, you know, Peter Parker or Scott Summers or whatever. So for me, it kind of became a matter of, when I saw you out of drag, that was that persona. So I was called, so you know, whenever, like when you come to Barrioke, when you come as Rob, you're Rob. And then when you come in, when you've come from a gig, or you're hosting or helping out at a pageant or whatever, you know, whatever you're doing and you're working, you come, you know, in full guiche, you're Chantel. And I distinguish that.
I love the fact that I have two different playlists with you.
that's the best part. You're one of the only people.
Nice.
So I guess it leads back to, how do you deal with that with a lot of people? Because I know you've even said to me that there are people who have no clue what your real name is.
Oh gosh, you know what? I'm going to go back to high school. I have had some incredible educators throughout my career and throughout life. And one of them her name was Mary Pudwilkowski. And there was an underlying rule, a thought, that when you became a senior in high school, you could call her Mary. You didn't have to call her Mrs. Kautz. But there was always that one moment where the seniors had to ask her permission for it. It wasn't just a given, right? And we're in our senior year in choreography class, and I'm sitting there, and of course, everybody looks to me because I'm the only boy in the class. Well, Not that that meant a lot. But they elected me to ask her. And so I said, Mrs. Kowski, she said, yes, Rob. And I said, are we allowed to call you Mary now? And she looked at me. She said, okay, just so you all understand where I'm coming from with this. I really don't care if you call me Mary or Mrs. Kowski, but however you address me as your teacher and the respect it deserves. And I've carried that actually throughout everything that I do. There are a lot of people that will only know me as Chantel. I'm blessed to say that this career has a bit of a public figure attached to it. So that's how I'm identified. But at the end of the day, how I carry myself and how people view me, however they say whatever name they say, they're saying it with that intent. If I'm a nasty person, it doesn't matter if you call me whatever. You're going to say it with the same intent as if I'm a good person, a caring person, a giving person. And as we address people, a lot of times we even address our friends with different names, with hey boo, hey what up boy, hep child. You know, when we do it with a good intent because that's how they carry themselves, it's going to come across with how you're addressed, no matter whether it's male, female, positive, negative. You earn your address. And so that's why it doesn't bother me when people, where was I at? Publix. Public yesterday. Just yesterday. I am trying to get some food, trying to get out of there before the storm goes. The cashier looks, goes, hey, Miss Chantel. Now, you know I wasn't up in Geesh, but I sure did turn and looked and said, hey, girl. I said, I'm trying to beat the storm. And all the confused shoppers looked at me and said, looked around. And you know they were going, did that cashier just call that man Chantel? Because I just came to the from the gym, so I was pumped up. I was good and butch until he said Chantel. Then the girl had to come out. Said with respect and love. You can't get mad about it.
Harper, who this woman? So you were talking about the first initial transformation and going back and how you felt all of that power. So that's your origin. But let's talk about the hero's journey. Like, how does one start off, you know, just I put on like a pair of pumps. I got some like lipstick on, maybe some gloss if I'm going for young and nubile, to like the polished performer who I had the pleasure of seeing like 2 feet away from me during a wonderful Acherry event where I was the MC.
Well, let me just tell you before you answer that, it is not that easy, because last Halloween I threw on some damn heeled boots and a wig, and I cut a pair of jeans into a skirt. I didn't feel that power. It was a little sad. This may get cut out of the episode.
You were a warrior, though.
I might have been Kesha for Halloween.
After the glitter dumpster.
I had glitter all up in my wig, and you know, I might have sprayed glitter all over me. So,
Yeah,
glitter bombings happened.
I'm sorry, what was the question? I got so distracted.
The process from, like, what's your journey been like? Like, how do you, like, perfect your craft? Like, I know, like, the first number you ever did isn't anywhere near as polished as the last number you just performed, or it may have been. Like, what have you found to be, like, the highs, the lows, the ins, the out?
Wow. I'm probably one of the few entertainers that will tell you, beyond the aesthetics of the makeup and the hair and the padding of the body, my number probably at that point, I started on a performance high, and then it went downhill as I was learning drag. Because I was always a musical theater performer. I was always a dancer. I was a gold level 2 ballroom dancer before I started doing drag. But the irony of that was I was a lead, not a follow. So I had to relearn a lot of the follow and let go of the lead position, become the ballroom dancer I am now as the female. There, I think every drag queen goes through a moment where, you know, we first hit the scene, and then a couple people go, oh, they see our potential, and then they worship us. And that's deadly, because after you worship us, then all of a sudden we go through a period of learning. Everybody's giving us clothes and makeup and tips and hair, and you're just showered. And then once you get to that crossover, that ledge where all of a sudden you start making a mark and you go from a beginner to being a threat, then you get to deal with the other stuff they don't warn you about, the cutthroat. And every story ever fabricated that you hear, it was not fabrication, it was true. It is really a dog eat dog business where you have to hide your clothes, you know, pray things don't get stolen, pray things people don't, you know, torch your gown. These things happen. It's drag gangsters, and you have to be careful. And after a while, though, when you get some limited success and you have enough people that worship you, they start telling you how pretty you are 24/7, myself included. You buy into it. And when you buy into it, you start to go downhill again. And if I didn't have, of all people, Denise Russell, who I didn't like who I became. I didn't like what drag had done to me. I liked the confidence, but I didn't like the arrogance that I absorbed. And when I start losing contests going, and my response was, these judges didn't know what they were doing, I take a step back and go, that's not who I was. Mm-hmm. Easy to get caught up in all of it.
Do you find that the, in some communities, this is more prominent, I think, than Orlando, the drag houses are kind of a, sort of an example of that sort of gang mentality that you see, and that they could be very protective of each other and then aggressive against others outside of the house?
I've never been part of a house. Let me first start to say that. But you do see the sororities, and they're very powerful. You know, everybody wants to be a hunter. Everybody wants to be a tailor. You know, you get these names that are synonymous with success, and you want to be attached to that because it gives you an elevation. But then you have to put up or shut up. I've been very blessed. I have three daughters. No one knows this because every one of them, I said, you can be my drag daughter, but you have to have your own name. I've never let anybody, with the exception of Drew at Turnabout at Parliament House. He's the only one that has ever had the name Riche. But between me and Sassy Divine, we put him together, and he was trying to come up with a name. I said, you should be Riche Divine. Because it sounded really pretty, personally. But my other daughters, Amanda Summers, no relation to the Summers here, has been out in California, been doing a fabulous, fabulous comedy show there, completely separate. And her shtick is Amanda Summers, Miss Gay. No, I'm sorry. Amanda Summers, Miss America 19 never. And you know, so she her promo is her as Miss America traditional, but you know, she made her own mark, and no one would know she's my daughter because she has her own name. But I found that very valuable, to have my own name, so whatever I do with it, positive or negative, I can have complete ownership of. But the houses are a good safe haven. But with that safe haven, you have to share the triumphs and the tragedies. And I'm someone who wants to own what I earn. That's why I protect my reputation. But so I've had more triumphs than tragedies, but my tragedies I've learned from.
So going along with that, and you being like this proud, triumphant, independent spirit who sometimes has to look in the mirror and says, girl, don't let your wig get too big for your body. What is competing like in pageants? Because I think for most of us who don't secretly at night, just I'm up and I'm not tired, so I watch all these like random documentaries, and I'll watch Paris is Burning for like the 18,000th time, or I'll watch a documentary about pageants, and it seems like, oh, you know, there's glitz and glamour and there are different aspects of it, but at its root, it's like a competition, and people are trying to cut you out from under them. And like, what is that like?
Well, first I have to ask, have you seen my documentary?
No, I have not. No one told me. See, this is why I need a better showrunner and producer.
Excuse me.
I am so tired of people booking me in these chicken shit shows.
Can I please get my car keys? This is done.
Oh my god.
Girl, you in luck. If you watched it when it first came out, it would cost you $20. Now you can watch it for $2.99 on iTunes.
And I need to. I keep meaning YouTube too, I think, has it, or some
yes,
other one.
A red box. It's cheap now.
Well, please. No, this is amazing. This is really cool. You were telling me a story before we started recording about going to Sundance. I'm like, oh my god, what? That's crazy.
Yeah,
oh.
When my film came out, and they did a documentary on pageants, and it was actually about Miss Gay America. I got an email one day. I'm out of the blue saying, you know, we want to do this documentary. They sent it to every contestant. I said, oh, that sounds like fun. Sure, come meet me. So they came to my room to meet me, and Jake was there, my dancer, and they started interviewing me, and they said, oh, and Jake was a very polite gentleman. He's like, should I leave? And the guy interviewed me said, oh, no. Everybody's husband usually stays. I said, oh, he's not my husband. He's straight. And
of course, bitch.
So that everybody's like, all of a sudden he was like, he's straight? What do you mean he's straight? And he's dancing with you at a gay pageant? No one could wrap their brain around it. Well, then they decided on five other people for their movie. And I'm not stupid. I looked at the website. I saw. I said, oh, that's how the Alyssa Edwards was one of them. I shouldn't say that, but I'm going to anyway.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Well, you got secret ties to Alyssa and Coco.
No, she was one of the original people up in the movie. And they got, they, for some reason, she ended up not being a part of it. But then they end up having to replace a couple of people. That's when they asked Porkchop and I to be a part of it. And like, I remember the filmmakers were like, oh, we knew we wanted you the whole time. And I was thinking, I'm an educated man from Iowa with a college degree. I am not looking at this unrealistically. I knew what was going on. I didn't let them know. It didn't matter. I was still getting filmed. So they came to Orlando. They filmed me for a couple of days. And then they filmed me at Nationals. And next thing I know, well, the promo video came out. Had Victoria De Paula and Alina Milletti. I said, well, I guess I didn't make the movie. No big. So then a couple months later, they called me. They say, hi. I said, hi. I said, oh, well, did you see the promo? I said, yeah, it looks great. And the producer's like, you didn't call us. I said, was I supposed to? And they responded with, well, you're the only one who didn't call to complain that you weren't in the promo. I went, it's a business. It's a movie. I just figured I wasn't right for your project. You just didn't use me. He's like, no, warning. We got the director who won an award for Hoop Dreams, and he came through and he worked through the whole movie and put a lot of it around you and Victoria Parker because he thought that was the most interesting storyline. So just get ready. Next thing I know, we're showing at Slam Dance, which happens concurrently with Sundance. So it may as well be Sundance, just, you know, the redhead stepchild of it, because it's all the non-politically correct movies. And I said, oh,
look, it's John Waters for the umpteenth time.
I said, oh, well, let me buy a plane ticket. And I got a hotel room and I rented a car, and Jake decided he would come up and see the premiere because we thought it was just going to be a fun weekend. And as soon as we let them know that we were coming, they said, oh, okay, then here's your itinerary. I went, itinerary? Wait, I bought this ticket on Southwest. You didn't. What do you mean itinerary? Well, we had appearances and we were there for the premiere, and they were so hush-hush about it. And again, there was this big push, and this is Hollywood and all of that. There's a big push for Victoria De Paula and Victoria Parker. I was in town. I was there. They were doing this big segment for Entertainment Tonight, and I was in town. I could have done it, but the producers at this point were so focused on pushing those two publicly. So Jake and I drive up. He gets in town. We drive from Salt Lake City. We were staying. We get there and we go to the venue, and they want to do their first press interview. Well, they had the two Victorias do their stuff because they were the stars. And then their publicist, not thinking clearly, unfortunately for everybody else but me, said, we need to interview Hot Chocolate and Chantel because we were both there. I don't know if I can really say this. I'm a public speaker. Disney has trained me to be a public speaker. And as I'm having this interview with them, I'm speaking. So I'm blessed, good education. I'm speaking eloquently. It's not anything that was ingrained. It's something I learned. And the poor Victorias who spoke before me now all of a sudden sound like a third grade level compared to what I was talking. When I got done with my interview and they said thank you and cut, the entire room went into an ovation. And that's when everybody's like, we didn't know you could talk that way. I said, you spent all that time with me and you didn't get to know me? I, from then on, was always the forefront speaker for all the press events. The Victorias tried to keep up. God bless them. Oh, this is getting published, isn't it? It is what it is.
I feel like this is unsung on TV1. I'm so excited.
I was very lucky with a lot of it. But in the middle of the movie, then they ushered us in to watch it for the first time. We hadn't gotten to preview it at all. And that was probably the scariest thing, because there were some very honest emotions between Jake and I, that we were the best of friends. He is straight. I am gay. And it was a dynamic I had never experienced in my life, to be in love with my best friend and not be able to really express how I felt, because I knew what the tea was. And as we sat down, I looked at him and said, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm sorry for anything I might have said in this movie that embarrassed you. And he said, me too. I didn't know he had gotten interviewed when I was in competition. And in the movie, not to be a spoiler, but it's going to be a spoiler, baby.
That's all right.
He sat there and said, if I was a woman or if he was gay, we would probably be together. And oh, my Lord, y'all. This is a little bit of a demon for me, because he really was and still is one of my best friends in the world, and have a love that's that honest, that the only reason it can't progress further is physical. But to acknowledge it and still know that love can still exist that way, it was one of the hardest things and most beautiful things for me to hear for the first time. And that was his way of telling me, but it was on the screen, and I heard him say it on the screen, and I know I started to cry, and he put his hand on my knee, which probably was the worst thing and the best thing ever. And it was just such a finite moment in our friendship. So then we get to the rest of the movie, and of course they had lost my luggage, so all I had with me was what I had. So I took my glasses off real quick because heaven forbid my contacts were in my checked bag. And this girl in front of me turns around and goes, "Oh my god, I absolutely loved your music movie." I went, "Oh, thank you. Your story is beautiful." I went, "Thank you." We get up there, we do the press conference, we're answering questions, people come up, they're taking photos with us. The girl in front of me came up to take photos with me. She was so sweet. We get back to the condo for the after party. We were a huge success. And they're talking about all the people in the audience. They said, oh, I'm sorry, rewind. We were on the street on the way back to our cars, and Liza Dushku goes driving by, and she gets stopped in front of us, and she looks at me, she goes, "You're hot." I went, "Thanks." And she looks at Jake, she goes, "Ooh, but you're hot too." I was bitter for 2 seconds, and then I looked at Jake and I looked at her and I said, "Oh no, baby, it's Liza Dushku. That one's okay." So we get back to the condo, and they start talking about the people in the audience, because there were 100 and some people there for our world premiere. And they said, "Well, you saw Sarah Michelle Gellar was there." I went, "Buffy was not there." And they start laughing. I go, "What's so funny?" I said, "Chantel, she was sitting right in front of you." And I didn't realize it was her because I didn't have my glasses on. So here I had this full conversation with Buffy, and now it makes sense that she's sitting there looking at me with that little smile. And I'm going, in my mind, I was going, "Why is she looking at me that way? She's waiting for me to recognize her." I had no... Child, I was so stupid.
Oh, I am totally jealous that you just had one story that involved two slayers.
I know.
But where was Kendra? I ask you that. Where was Kendra?
That bitch is dead with Mr. Pointy. She and Mr. Pointy are not needed in the story. My heart just broke a little when you said Eliza Dushku.
She looked good too. You know who didn't look good? Angelica Houston, child.
Really?
Angelica tore up from the floor up, baby. Makeup does wonders for her.
Yeah, you think?
She went walking by. It was amazing because they say Sundance, if you can go, you see celebrities everywhere. Yeah, she went walking by and went, "Ooh." And then we were on our way to a photo shoot. This is completely off of drag. It just has to do with that, but that's okay.
No, we're rolling with it.
We're on our way to a photo shoot that was delayed, and they're like, "Well, we have to go to our other screening. Why is it delayed?" I said, "They had to bump someone in front of you." It was Getty Images, their photo shoot. So they everybody. I looked at Victoria Parker, who also looks like she saw a ghost. Can't speak. Can't look. Nothing's coming out of her mouth. I went, "What's wrong?" This, forgive the description, child. This black man walks by us, and she's like, I went, "Girl, what is your problem?" She's like, "That was Sean Combs." I said, "Sean Combs?" And my mind started reeling. I went, "Raised in the Sun." Right when I said that, I looked and realized, and out come the van, come Felicia Rashad, who I knew in a heartbeat. Ooh. And here goes, "Huh?" And then Anika Noni Rose, like, "Huh?" Yeah, it was a good day to be a queen. I love Sundance.
Oh, that was an amazing story.
I don't even know what your question was, but that's where it went.
No, I feel like it answered like that and several more.
Well, obviously you are a big geek.
Yes.
And this is something that we talked about in our last interview. You admitted to me that you were a comics collector.
I sure was. Yes. I still have them too.
Oh, that's right.
Mother shipped them all to me. They're sitting in boxes right now. I thought about selling them and try to buy a gown, but they're there.
You might get $5. No. It's,
so I have the original new Teen Titans. Don't try me. I know that's worth more than $5.
Well, so what were your favorite books when you were collecting?
Oh my gosh. Okay, first of all, I started off with Harvey Comics because I wanted the lifestyle Richie Rich. I loved all of his money. I liked the diversity of Dial H for Hero.
Oh.
Although none of mine ever submitted, ever got selected. I loved my escapism. I loved Princess Amethyst.
Oh. Amethyst. I love Amethyst.
It's so funny because both of these titles have been brought back in the last year.
And then canceled.
Well, and then canceled.
I'm not in the scene no more because, I have a mortgage. Yeah. So I have to be careful when I spend my money on.
Oh, don't let that stop. It doesn't stop me.
It hasn't stopped our rent payment.
I have a mortgage and a drag career.
Oh, that's true.
It's very limited. I did like Princess, though I didn't like how she had to die at the end and be reborn and be blind but could still see. That was very confusing to me.
Oh, the blind seer.
Oh, she was very confusing. I'm sad to say, I never really got into Marvel.
Yeah.
Which was amazing because I knew that was everybody's big thing. But I was such a devoted fan of Wonder Woman. As I sit there and grab my left breast, I was such a devoted fan of Wonder Woman that I was so DC comic oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So I did have the entire New Teen Titans series. I loved Starfire. I felt sorry for her crippled sister who couldn't fly. But too bad for her. I was very confused that Robin kept switching up just like members of Menudo.
That's a very apt description. Oh my God. I've never thought about it in that terms.
He hit puberty and that was it. New Robin.
It's like, oh, I'm so sorry. You can't be right. You're now Nightwing.
And they keep getting younger.
No. You know.
He's the Ricky Martin of the DC universe. I love it.
In my fantasy world, I love my mother. I love my mother to pieces. But as a child, you know, you don't think along those lines. So as a child, I wanted my parents to be Superman and Wonder Woman. That way I had the ability to fly. But when I was tired, I'd have an invisible jet to take. And I had great jewelry.
So well thought out.
It was very methodical. Oh,
I wish Eric was here for this interview because his Wonder Woman accessories would have been fantastic on Chantel.
Oh, they're so fantastic.
Can we get you, can your next number be a Wonder Woman number?
No, I'd be Nubia.
I can see that.
Silence hushes across this room.
I can see that.
You know Nubia because it's in your culture.
Yep.
Yes.
Like that bitch Isis. Oh, I'm so mad at Isis.
Zephyr winds so strong and high. Lift me now so I can fly. Yeah, child, someone give her a quaalude. She was always just whatever.
Mm-mm. Now, so is she like the DC equivalent of Storm from the 90s X-Men cartoon, where she always had to have a soliloquy before she could use her powers?
It takes too much time. I did pop in circles.
Y'all remember the 90s cartoon with Storm always like, gods from the east, bring me power so I can bring a storm upon you. Like, she had a whole, like, a paragraph before she put up again.
In the hood, she would have been shot before that would happen. As you talk, almost like in Indiana Jones, where that guy's whipping with that whip, and Indy goes, bam, I ain't got time for this. So she'd be like, bam. How'd that feel to you?
I'm telling you, the next time Chantel, because Chantel did, like Oral said, did perform at a fundraiser, a map fundraiser, at a comic shop. Did fabulous numbers. We've got some pictures.
Ooh, got dressed in an office that was hotter than Hades. Child, y'all put me through it that night. But it's okay. It's okay. I was all right. I was in Amy Winehouse. I was drugged up anyway. Not really, people, but just go with it.
So next time we do a fundraiser, ooh, maybe at the Skip Enders game event that we're doing on November 1st.
The what?
So on November 1st, as part of the Geeks Out Skip Enders game movement, because they are boycotting Orson Enders Scott game. Card's Enders game because of his past with his past, present, future, you know.
He's a crazy Mormon.
Yes.
And I love some Mormons, and they're usually very nice.
Mormons are fantastic.
Well, he is a crazy Mormon.
He could be fabulously nice, but he could still be a dick.
He is part of the NOM organization. He's funded the Prop 8 stuff in California.
He basically is against all gay rights and gay marriage.
Very outspoken.
But you know what? This is going to sound very strange to me from coming on this side of the tracks. I appreciate those people because when you're born and raised in an area where racism and bigotry and hatred is, you know, quiet and just behind the scenes, you subtle. You don't get change. You need those ignorant people out there to make people make a choice, and you're seeing it. So, you know, I'm so glad you're so stupid and outspoken, because the more you talk loud and stupid, the more we're able to get people motivated to what we need to do.
Well, that is very true.
And without
I would still like to
we wouldn't have Spender's game. So thank you, Orson Scott Card, for giving us a great occasion to protest your movie.
I mean, Chick-fil-A itself, by saying they say we support, have sat there and set a riot.
You know, I
still like Chick-fil-A though.
I have a confession to make.
Uh-huh.
I got me some black market waffle fries this past like 2 months. I come in, people come into the store, I'm just like, how dare you bring this filth to my store? That'll be 3 waffle fries, please. You got some Polynesian sauce? You got some Polynesian sauce, girl?
When you don't pay for it, it's okay. So if someone wants to bring us Chick-fil-A, I will not say no.
You've at least downloaded some waffle fries. It's okay.
Exactly.
It is A-okay.
I will drink the Jesus juice. But because, you know, oh my God, did y'all see, so off topic, but that's okay because you gave me that planter's punch. Did y'all see that Prime Minister interview on YouTube on how how he switched his views on gay marriage and gay lifestyle?
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. It was brilliant.
Because a pastor asked him.
How challenging.
He
challenged him. He didn't ask me. Challenged him. It was in, go ahead, baby.
No. You, please. I watched part of it, and what's funny is Australia is very conservative overall as a culture, and that prime minister particularly is very conservative politically, but socially he was very articulate about how his religion, he's a Christian, had no issues with gays and lesbians because God made them that way and was just so, it was very beautiful the way he explained it. I won't even do it justice.
But the whole premise behind what he said is everything within God's law ultimately was about love and loving thy fellow man. Everything else was a subset. And if you truly believed in God's law, you were truly a Christian, then you believed love trumped everything. And it whether it is a preordained position, is that the right word?
Yeah, you can say that.
Sure. If you're born that way or if you choose to be that way, as long as you live in the God's eyes of love, then your choices were right. And when you go back to your book, he sat there and said, the man who brought up the question said issues about, you know, homosexuality being an abomination according to the book, and he responded with, the good book also says slaves should honor thy master, which is so completely out of the times. And he spoke about how you must evolve with the times to be a better society, and this book was written at a time when society was what it was. I'm going to say something very thought-provoking, I would like to think. I can believe that God did not want homosexuality in the beginning. Because how in the world are you going to populate this world if you only have two people to start with? The job is done. We here. We can slow down the process a bit. Look at China. Oh. More gays there, less babies. Everybody's happy.
I do love that idea that gays and lesbians are becoming more and more prominent and common as a reaction to the population control.
You know, I do believe people and cultures and religions can change throughout time. I mean, really, where else will you find a red lobster but the South? And if we weren't supposed to eat crustaceans, they wouldn't taste so good with butter and garlic sauce. And adobo.
Hallelujah.
I've never had lobster with adobo.
You live in a house with a Puerto Rican now. There's adobo here. Get some lobster. You'll be okay.
Well, I'll have to try that. So
we're going to have lobster next week?
Yeah.
Seriously?
We'll do a viewing party with lobster, butter sauce, adobo, and your movie.
You started talking about Skip Hunter's Game.
Yes. So back to Skip Hunter's Game.
I only want to make
so
sure.
Sorry for our tangents.
No. I love the tangents. I just want to make sure that because this will be coming out around the time that, well, actually close to like beginning of October or whatever. So, you know, it'll be coming up.
Yes.
So at the comic shop, it'll be on September 1st.
Mm-hmm.
November 1st.
It is close to September 1st now. And it will be potentially quite a nice little flame on event. And Pat will be
there. You do know I'm working, right?
You'll be working there.
You'll be working it at a comic shop.
So okay, yeah. So we'll figure out a way because I actually want to do a live recording. And maybe we can have
from
like
the
a
register?
Yes, we can have like.
I can hook up a wireless microphone. Yeah, don't you worry. We will get you there. You can interview.
My headset. Ooh, it's like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Girl, it'll be just like Gay Days.
Oh,
not this last one, the one before that, where we tried the wireless microphone and sent you out there.
We could get Ronell to come back and do a little guest spot now.
And then we said, well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And then there was 6 minutes of music and nothing.
just a side note before we get back to our special guest. Do you know that Ronell is actually a meme?
No.
Yes.
Wait, is this in the watermelon thing, is it?
No.
This is the
A what?
The Beyonce a meme. Like a
viral
picture, yeah.
Picture video thing. Goes around the internet.
Okay.
Screaming goats. Any of these things.
Oh, I haven't seen
oh
that.
My god.
Or like Keanu Reeves
grumpy
with
cat.
The grumpy cat.
Is this so in other words for someone who is not really into all of this, one of those stupid videos that when it pops up you have to take 2 seconds to watch.
Yeah.
Epic twerk fail.
The twerking fail.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
Okay, so her buns
okay,
on
so
fire.
That's a meme.
Okay,
okay.
Got it.
So Ronell's
well,
a meme.
He
I need
was,
one of those.
He was at a Beyonce concert in LA and he got chosen to go on stage with Beyonce.
He must have had good seats.
He did.
He paid
and
for that.
And he went berserk. The problem is that, you know, Ronell, once you've met him, he's got a face you'll always remember.
Yes.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah.
And so he, you know, reacted like any good gay would.
Uh-huh.
And they took a picture of it because, you know,
oh,
a fan got to go, ooh, girl, it's gone everywhere.
Really?
Everywhere.
Chantel, so
yes.
We've seen you and we've exposed you to some more people at a comic shop and they absolutely loved you. You floored. Ooh.
Except those people playing poker.
Well, they were busy playing poker, but
they were losing. That was why they
well,
were busy.
True. The biggest reaction that the crowd had was an overall just amaze at how well you did in your performance and all of that.
Aww.
So besides your random amazing charity event appearances at a comic shop, where else can we see you perform as Chantal Roche?
I am regularly on Showcast at Banana's Diner every Sunday for gospel brunch.
Hallelujah.
Let me tell you how mad I am that every Sunday I gotta work and I can't go to a gospel brunch. It tears at my soul each and every day, and I feel myself falling further and further from the good Lord's graces.
Well, we need to get you and Eric. We'll ask Eric to cover a Sunday for you, and then we'll all go and see Chantal perform. Well, isn't there another? Isn't Adam?
Can't y'all
is there
just
Adam?
Close down for a day.
We'll get somebody to work for you. Brian will work that for you.
Yeah, seriously.
Wait, comic shops are open on Sunday morning.
Yeah,
it's open Sunday from noon to six. The problem is when I brunch, I really am not good for anything but talking to people afterwards.
Baby, just because you get chicken and waffles does not mean you need to get a mimosa to wash it down.
Ooh. But what is brunch? But not food?
Brunch is food
and booze.
No. No, no.
I've never been to a brunch the age of 21 where I have not had at least six or seven
drinks.
Wait
a minute. We went to dim sum and you didn't have alcohol.
Dim sum is different.
That's brunch.
I was drinking tea. And then right afterwards, I drank a case of wine with some friends. And
dim
then went
sum.
To a fancy restaurant.
Dim sum, unlike the Denny's in Las Vegas, apparently, does not have a full bar. Or at least a bar, period, to offer libations. Mm-hmm. You know Oral's going to be buying that bottle.
The bottle service?
Yes. Bottle service at Bananas.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
just
you
like
know
the
we have
Icon
bottle
Lounge.
Service at the Parliament House now, too.
Yes. The Icon Lounge by Grey Goose.
Very swanky.
Mm-hmm.
We got to make sure we say Grey Goose, because otherwise they'll try to sue us. I don't know if they will, but you know.
So where else are you?
I might do an occasional pool game at the Parliament House on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. But performance-wise, I pretty much just am at Bananas Diner and Funky Monkey restaurants. Occasionally, I'm at Point Orlando at a Funky Monkey there. But I spend a lot more of my time these days competing nationally and then also producing the shows at the Parliament House.
So you were saying that you compete in pageants.
I do.
You... And I know this because I may have worn this crown. I'm not going to admit or deny this. But you recently competed and won a crown.
Baby, not recently. It was 7 months ago. It's just early in the pageant season. Yes, I went to Western States and, I went to Phoenix, Arizona and won Miss Gay Western States America.
And when you came back, the first thing you did, you got off the plane. You drove your happy ass on over to Barrioke, crown and all.
Sure did. I won the war. I wanted to show the spoils.
It was a fabulous crown.
Oh, thank you.
They
thank
are impressive.
You.
I will say this. Drag crowns are impressive crowns.
You know what's funny about America? They have a standard crown. Like other systems, they can kind of mix and match their crowns until you get to the national level. America, every level is a standard crown. The first time I won my second crown in America, they crowned me, and then my first thought was, I already have that one. If you come into my house, I can tell you, Pat, I have 9 of those crowns.
Oh my goodness.
I have enough that I can make bracelets and necklaces. I want to bust them up. I can make an entire crown dress if I wanted to. That's how much I have not won the national title.
Well, the funny part, and to completely go off a drag for a hot second, we were watching Wipeout, and they did their blind date Wipeout, and one of the girls that they brought out as the blind date was a pageant queen.
Oh,
and she walks out with the big ass crown, and Brian and I both stopped and were like, did she win a drag pageant? Because it was the same exact crown.
Messy. Messy.
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
So for the young ones, not to say that you're older, but you're seasoned.
I'm older.
For the young ones looking to get into drag, what are some of the do's and don'ts?
The first don't is don't rely on drag to pay your bills. That's the biggest red flag I can tell you right now. I'm blessed. I'm a college graduate. I have a full-time job. I've always had a full-time job, completely separate from the industry. There was at one point I was making more money as Chantel than I was in my day job. But because drag is entertainment and it's fickle, the minute you get on someone's bad side, they take that away from you. You are penniless.
Mm-hmm.
Always have a real job. On the do's, do embrace the fact that you're not perfect. No matter where you're at, no matter how much success you've had, know that there's always something newer, bigger, brighter, better, prettier, fancier, sexier that you can aspire to. We are an image-based industry. It's not like being an accountant. You're an accountant. It is purely your output that is evaluated. Doesn't matter what you look like. Doesn't matter how much your personality is. If you can put out all of this stuff and it's accurate and you make the business money, you're going to get rewarded. Drag is not that. Drag is about creating illusions, creating energies, entertaining your people, staying fresh, staying current. Carol Channing is who she is because she made a name for herself back in the day. If she tried to do that same exact thing in something new, they would laugh at her because mm-hmm. it's not current. But she has such a huge standing with who she was. That's what keeps her viable. Madonna is probably the best example of keeping up with the times. If she tried to do like a virgin today, people would laugh at her. But she's changed her style to go with the period. As a queen, you have to mimic those exact movements. Know what's current and try to stay ahead of the current. You know, at this point, no one should be doing pussycat dolls.
That's still a thing.
Because it's not even old enough to be old school yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of in the past. You know, you have Kesha now. You have, you know, like for the boy entertainers, we just had Mr. Continental. Not one of them did Blurred Lines. I'm like, that is one of the hottest songs right now because of what happened with Miley Cyrus. That we just had an entertainer at the Palma House. Miley Cyrus makes a fool of herself because she's stupid, and Billy Ray should have smacked her ass a few more times. But the queen that came this past weekend had the Miley Cyrus bear on her chest, had the big old bear on her back, and she made her money because she stayed on top of the curve. You got to stay current. You got to be very aware of what's going on. And if you think that this is about just being beautiful, you're going to fall on your face.
Case in point, but on the good spectrum and not the bad, I was at P House a couple of weeks ago for a friend's birthday. And so we were watching the show. We were second row in. Oh. And it's the drag queen from Jacksonville, Barbie...
Barbie Royale. Yeah,
thank you. She's one of my new favorites because that bit came out in full neon zebra print and did the aria from The Fifth Element.
Oh my
and
god.
And so you had all the gay geeks losing their shit.
Holy shit.
And I'm just like, I gotta reach in and find some type of money. Yeah. Didn't get there in time. She was already doing her final bow. Oh but I'm just like, god,
she would have still taken it had you made the effort.
You know, and then I thought, well, you know what, girl, I didn't make it. I mean, even though I'm a second row and you probably saw me, here's $5 on the dance floor. But anyway.
As long as you got it to her.
It was phenomenal because she did something super out there and experimental, and only a few of us got it, but the few of us who got it, we were like, you just killed me, bitch. You just took me to church and back.
And she's young. She's smart, and she understands it's not about being body beautiful 24/7. Body beautiful helps,
mm-hmm.
but you gotta know your audience. You gotta know who's coming to watch you. You gotta know what's gonna pull them in and what they're gonna enjoy. We can take entertainment so many different directions, but it's kind of like going in up into Cowboys there on OBT and sitting there and trying to do a rock concert.
Mm-hmm.
It's a country bar. Same thing with, you know, popping into the New Phoenix on one of the lesbian nights and doing a song, you know, about, you know, wanting a man to seduce you. That's not gonna play. I walk in there and I do I Hate Men.
Isn't every night lesbian night at New Phoenix?
Yeah. I kind of thought that.
Some more so than others.
Just like Revolution.
Ooh.
That we ceded to the lesbians years ago. Lost it in the war. Never got it back. But Fuego Fridays used to be
their
shit.
They need their place.
Sure they do.
I love lesbians.
Over by the interstate.
But Giselle is amazing. Giselle is one of my favorites to photograph. Partially because she is such an entertainer and plays to the crowd. Yes. And she is all over and doing all of these things and just kind of trying to stretch her boundaries.
Mm-hmm. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
That means he's tired of talking. So
I could talk for hours, but I don't want to be accused of monopolizing your time. I mean, you're a very, very busy woman. You're an entertainer. You run
not
an
tonight.
Empire.
I'm good. I'm drinking and I'm with friends. Keep going. Come on.
Okay. Well then, folks, you're in it for another like 10 to 20 minutes.
Ask the dark, dirty questions. So ask me the dish. Okay. Come on. Okay.
Do we have
so we're going to get there. It's like Ricky Lake back in the day. Not new Ricky. I can't do new Ricky. Okay.
She's back.
So, come at me. Come on.
Okay, so
she is back, but her show is still
it's terrible. Okay, so what I want to know is what is from the inside out the drag scene like in Orlando?
It's splintered.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very splintered. No, honestly, what you're going to find in the drag community right now, we've gone through a series of social disruption.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I can put it. You have a faction of these are the boy queens, these are the girl queens. Your boys who have no work done, and the ones who start becoming tranny. There's a slight confusion. Here's where I start getting in trouble for being honest, but it's what I feel. Slight confusion for those who want to become tranny because of the business, as opposed to those who want to become tranny because it's what they want their lives to be. I will always support anybody for doing what they want for their life. I will never support anybody for augmenting their body just for a job. You're doing it for the wrong reasons. You're going to end up resenting it, and then you're going to end up being an opponent of it because you had a bad experience. The drag community here in Orlando, you still deal with people who think the novelty is being tranny. The boy queens do not have the same respect as our tranny queens. And that's my observation. If you look at what the boy queens do in all the clubs, they handle your comedy, they handle your happy hour, they handle the lighter stuff. But when you get to the weekend where it is the diva positions, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a transsexual. Which I have a hard time saying that because a lot of them I work with, and I know their work ethic is honest and sincere, and they produce a good product. But a lot does not mean all. And when you have those few bad seeds in there, it does cast a dark shadow on all. So it's not, you know, 100%. But Orlando went from transsexuals being the novelty to transsexuals being the norm. And a lot of people I speak to in my travels want to go back to it being a novelty. But at the same time, these are our sisters who are part of our community. And when we deal with still hatred outside of it, my question personally is this a battle worth discussing and arguing and fighting for right now, when as a community, if push came to shove, we would all still unite to defy those people who are trying to say we're not normal, we're not deserving, not worthy as a community. So it's a catch 22 for me.
It's toe the line now. We'll deal with all the little stuff later.
And then I'll deal with the local.
Well, and it is so weird because I go up to DC a lot, and DC is very much, it is novelty. I mean, their drag community is traditional, old school. It's drag. It's not transsexuals. And so I've always found it odd and kind of interesting. And I'm from South Florida, and it was the same thing down there, although it may have changed. I don't know. I guess it really shouldn't matter, because whether or not they live their lives as women outside the bar or not, it doesn't matter. You know, the only difference really when it comes down to it is padding or enhancements. And so who cares?
And honestly, for our work, you know, Danielle Hunter, she is who she is. When I say one of the biggest supporters I've ever had in my life and one of the most compassionate people, and, you know, she lives her life the way she lives it. You know, Sassy Divine also. As much as I have that opinion, I feel almost like I betray myself, because some of the best people in my world right now who want to see my dreams come true and who want to support me live that lifestyle. So as much as I say it one direction, I look back at my positive examples. I don't think there's near enough of them, but those few examples just really make me embrace that they're happy. But as an entertainment venue, again, I still get torn by saying it, but when we were back in the day when they were the exception and not the norm, they were better, more welcome and more well received. But then I look at people like it, locally, I look at Carolee Miss Sammy, I look at Gidget Galore, I look at Addison Taylor, I look at their comedy venues, I look at their happy hours, their pool games, I look at their bingos, and they're just as viable, and they're just as appreciated. And then you get the community splinter, where you have people who sit there and say, we want the boy drag. And then you get the tranny parties, where we deal with, you know, the eroticism of it, which has a whole nother element. And you take all of this, and you get overwhelmed by it for a hot second, and then you think Pat Robertson lumps us all in one and say none of it's viable. And that's what brings us back as a community, where we have that blessing of being superficially stupid and saying, well, I'm better than you, and da-da-da-da-da, when realizing as a community we're stronger against those powers that are still trying to tear us down, saying stupid things like, oh, our mission is to pass AIDS off to everybody.
Oh my God, the rings, the AIDS rings.
The rings.
I'm like, what the hell? What?
Stupidity still reigns. Racism, bigotry, fear of gays. I'm going to tell you honestly, the only change that's going to happen is when those people die off.
Well, lots of them are old and
not dying soon enough. That I'm going to speed it up, but Lord knows I can pray for
it. At least
the
networks are editing them now. That's the nice thing. When the 700 Club has to edit Pat Robertson, you know the times are changing.
Well, I just worry that it doesn't matter even when they die off, because they're having kids, and there's always going to be that element, no matter what.
They're all moving to Russia. So,
well, that might help.
Well, you know, and this is not to say that, because I grew up Southern Baptist, so I got the highs and the lows, and a lot of the just keep your mouth shut in church, sit in the first pew, and nobody will recognize. But some of my best friends came from like very strict religious households where there weren't many very many freedoms, and you know, I met them in school, I met them through mutual friends, and my superpower, if I have one, it's that parents love me. I introduce myself, I'm very eloquent, I'm very polite, and I have parents to this day who say, you're not going to church because of your friend Oral. And they're like, no, it's just I've grown up and I, you know, no longer feel the need to go to church anymore. It's like, well, you know, if you ever want to invite him over to dinner still, please feel free. Let him know that I'm praying for him. Like, your daughter's going to hell, but you still want to invite me over for dinner. I think I'm doing a good job. And it's like that new generation, like, don't discount us because we're there and, you know, we're very pliable.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same way. I grew up very religious and it affected me, but it did not make me. And so I think it tempers you, but it doesn't make you as whole old school intolerant, you know, Vladimir Putin sort of.
So it's safe to say all of your friends' parents loved Oral.
I hate you so much. On so many levels.
Let me tell you, not having anything to do with being gay.
O-R-A-L.
But being of an ethnic nature, which...
A black man named Oral, yeah.
These two children can't understand, but Oral, you definitely can. Mm-hmm. It was very weird for me growing up, and this is what I think started tempering my personality growing up. It's very odd being a young child, you know, 6, 7 years old, and you know you have a play date with a friend, and you show up at the door, and you go knock at the door, because, you know, it's Iowa, you can walk to everybody's house. And it's, hi! And you see that, you know, your friend welcomes you to the door, and you walk in the house, and you meet the parents, they go, oh. And then 5 minutes later, oh, Robbie, I'm sorry, we have to go over to Grandma, she just had a fall, you're going to have to go home. And you all of a sudden realize you have to get in the habit of asking your friends when they say, you want to come over and play, say, do your family know I'm black? And as a child, you didn't really understand the entire social emphasis of that. But you understood.
And you got the good hair.
Right? I did have the good
hair. Oh, I'm so jealous.
But, you know, I had to experience that quite a bit as a child, knowing that I tell my friends, do your family know I'm black? And they were like, huh? And I bless my friends didn't get the question. But after a while, they understood. And I had some that were very, very close. My oldest friend, Ben Schaefer, we met in kindergarten. We became closest friends because we were the two shortest boys in the class. You know, safety numbers. He is now married. He has 3 beautiful children. His wife is wonderful. They came to Disney, and for the first time, he came to Disney with his wife, his children, and his parents. But it was so nice that they were coming off the Wedway People Mover. Very relaxing ride for those of you who just want
one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. It's very peaceful, you can have a beverage and not realize it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, take it right there, and as soon as you start to go, you just pull it right out and just enjoy going through everything. So I'm out there and waiting for them to come off the ride, and of course, I'm on my phone texting because I'm like, where are they at? I look up and I see my little girls waving at me. I was like, oh, they're my babies. I should be their godfather, fairy godmother, whatever. And here it comes in, and all of a sudden, I see his parents, and they looked at me, and they looked the same to me, just a little older, but they looked exactly the same because we grew up that way. And they're the ones that have always embraced me ever since I was 5 years old. And it was weird. They said, you know, we haven't seen you since you graduated high school. I had to think about it because I kept seeing Ben and his family coming to visit me. And all of a sudden, here I start showing my age. I hadn't seen them in over 20 years. And to still feel that love from them, there are such good people in this world that are like that. And then you have the bad ones that sit there and screw everything over. We just have to fight.
Yep.
So real quick, before you get into your question, keep that in mind. Okay, so this is going to come out probably a little bit afterwards, but you got 2 pageants coming up.
I do. Oh, Lord.
Okay, and one has a very funny video, which I finally got around to watching. It took me about a week or so to finally get around to watching it. And then I shared it because we want to support you. You know, Flame On and Bears in the City want to support our girl.
Thank you. Thank you.
So tell us about the 2 pageants coming up.
Two distinctly different pageants. The one coming up, which, when is this going to be?
It's going to be a while. It's going to be afterwards. So.
Okay, folks. I'm not going to speak in past tense. And I'm going to speak as if it was a wonderful pageant. And please Google to see if I'm saying that facetiously or if it's real and I have the crown. Okay. No. Every year there's a pageant called Miss America. M-I-S-S apostrophe D America. It started off about 20 years ago. All the supporters of traditional Miss America in Atlantic City, after 1 year after the pageant, they all got together and they decided, you know, they missed the pageant, so they have their own. So it was a big old joke. It was just a fun, good time and unwind. Well, they started having it every year. That escalated to people starting to come and watch it, and then they all of a sudden realized they didn't tear down the America set at Boardwalk Hall, so 1 year they decided to have it in Boardwalk Hall on the traditional set. They started selling money. It started becoming a fundraiser. Then Miss America Traditional decided that it needed to broaden its horizons, and it went off to Las Vegas. That ended both pageants for Atlantic City. A couple of years ago, Hill and Schultz Foundation, two very generous men, decided they wanted to do a fundraiser for the GLBT community in Atlantic City. So while Miss America was in Atlantic City, Miss America was in Las Vegas, Miss America was brought back to Atlantic City in Boardwalk Hall in the tradition of Miss America, right down to the Miss America set, the Miss America runway, the Miss America quality. They put their money into it, and they would get celebrity guests. And they took a pageant that was once a joke pageant, and they turned it into a refined, legitimate pageant as far as contestant quality. Michelle Dupree won the first year they brought it back. Since then, it had two more years. The second year, again, it was a higher quality. Then they wanted to reach out, and they wanted to make it a nationwide pageant. And that's when they started trying to recruit people from across the country. Victoria Parker and I were two of the people that were very generously allowed to be a part of the pageant. And I say that because their production quality was insane for me. For having been in pageants where I have to pay for everything, my airfare was provided. My stay at resorts, hotels, and casinos was absolutely provided. There was a swag bag with over $1,000 worth of products, stemware, eyeglasses.
Wow. Stemware? Stemware.
The quality was insane. And I got to do something I loved in a place that I absolutely grew to love. And it was all in the sense of charity. And the first year I did it, I did a spoof on Mulan, which 1,500 people came to watch this pageant. That's there. So it's almost like Orlando's headdress ball.
Hmm. Which I have yet to go to. Wink, wink. Anybody who has connections.
Baby, I ain't never been to it.
You know who volunteers for that?
Yes, I know. Somebody who shall not be named.
Did you do the same Mulan with the video like we saw?
Absolutely.
That was spectacular.
It was
so good.
It was my multimedia. And the one thing I liked about it is it's different to do. I hope that everybody can eventually see my Mulan number. It's from the Broadway. Can't even say Broadway. It is from the musical Disenchanted Bitches of the Kingdom, which has been through several film festivals. Good Lord. French Festival. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I do quite a bit. And it tours quite a bit. It's coming back here to Orlando. If you have a chance to go see it, it's not a spoof of what happens to the princesses with Happily Ever After. Probably a little bit more real world with what the princesses endure. But I was very blessed that I did this whole multimedia presentation with my talent, that I got a standing ovation in a city where no one knew me, that I did not have a single personal supporter that knew me, but they appreciated the talent, and they appreciated the political message behind everything I did. And I made top five, and that's where the buck stopped. I didn't make top three, and I was okay with that, because in the end, it wasn't like other pageants I do. It's about the charity, about raising the money and providing them a good product that they could justify the tickets that they sold and raise the money for their community. So that's what I'm going to go do in 2 weeks. This year, I'm not going political. I'm going pure Disney, and I'm going to do my recreation of Belle for the children. And then in 5 weeks, I'll be at St. Louis competing for Miss Gay America, which I've competed at. If I lose this year, I will have beaten the record for most number of attempts.
Oh my God, you'll be the Susan Lucci.
Yes!
A Miss.
It is really that. Every year in pageant, we do our best to try to avoid the pitfalls. Oh my gosh, y'all don't even know this.
We will in 2 seconds.
Yeah, this year's trauma right now is I was trying to go in with two brand new gowns, and the makers of my gown made the first one just fine, and then my friend decided to help me out and pay for the second gown. They can't get it together that he paid for the second gown, so they're communicating with him, asking questions about the gown he ordered, and I'm communicating back with Attachy, all his correspondence, going, we're talking about the same gown. They keep telling me, we haven't gotten your payment. I'm 5 weeks out, so I may not have my final nightgown, and I have to not figure out what I'm doing. That'll happen today.
Oh,
life sucks. But
can we get you a gown with a sequin bears in the the City logo.
I would love.
I'm trying to put my own business over. All right. Shh. Calm down.
Well, you know what?
Curly locks in the back. We're good to go.
There you go.
Well, that leads into like a really good question. How does one get ready for pageants? Like, what is the process? Like, when do you start? Do you like sit down, you know, New Year's Day, and just like, had my black beans and like black eyed peas and rice, and now I'm going to this pageant in February.
It's so like applying for college.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably the best analogy, applying for college, because when you start to apply for college, you don't apply for one.
Right.
Yeah.
You apply for several. When you decide to become a pageant queen, it's not for one event. It is a commitment that's going to be ongoing. Very rarely does anybody win their first time. And if they do, they have screwed themselves. If I had won my first year, I would have been a hot mess as Miss Gay America, because I wouldn't have known the job. Had I won any time prior to this, well, in the first 5 years, I still would not have known what I was doing. I remember at one interview, they said, you have a full-time job at Disney. You have a full-time job at Prominent House. How are you going to handle it? And I looked at him and said, well, I have 3 weeks paid vacation. I'll be good. Yeah, that naivety is detrimental. I've lost enough. I've lost more than enough. But every loss, I've learned what I've done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it grows you as an entertainer, as a person at the same time. Cliche, yes. Is it trying to soften the blow? Absolutely. You know, trying to find that silver lining, that dark crown. Because honestly, it sucks losing. You don't spend $5,000 to be first runner-up. You don't sit there and look at the fact that you spent all this year saving this money, practicing your craft, trying to get all these materialistic things to go to a contest for 1 week in a city in the United States that you hardly leave the hotel because the schedule's so rigorous to lose, when all of a sudden afterwards, in fact, you could, that $5,000 could have been a trip to Amsterdam with money left over.
Mm.
But you start to see, especially with me, I first started as fun, and then as I started doing Miss Gay America more and more, I saw how the current reigning had a voice. And it's amazing to be intoxicated by that, have people want to be around you and want to be a part of your circle. And what you do with it is your own doing. I'm someone who, I came from very humble beginnings with a mother who's very strong, that understands that voice is very powerful in, you know, bringing help to causes, to events, to charities, because people want to follow you. They may not be invested in whatever your passion is, but because they're so superficial and they're following the queen, yeah, I'll manipulate you if it means I'm going to get more money for the Hope and Help Center, if I can get more money for St. Francis House, if I can do what I need to do to better the people within my community. If your ego and superficialness is so blinded by my beauty, I'm going to take your money, thank you, give you what you want is a moment in my spotlight, and then take what you give me and give it to someone else, which might be food for Thanksgiving.
Oh girl, she is Robin Hood
with much better pumps.
I love it. Oh, which is such the point of drag is in spandex. That is so, there it is.
Okay, so I think for my final question.
Someone's getting tired.
I'm not getting tired. Bitch, I could go all night.
Seriously.
You want to run with the bad kids? We'll run with the bad kids.
You know how much,
we'll
you know how much Pat has to edit out of him?
I know.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Like, all right, you know what I want? Okay, you have your final thought.
Yes.
I love both of you dearly. You each come with it. You each can ask me the most cutthroat question ever.
God.
Trust me on this one.
I'll leave you to the cutthroatness because I want to stay above reproach.
No, baby, because you know what?
Then can I get to?
You really? Because they're not real. I'm probably the most real queen you'll ever meet, and someone who came from a different background and views things so differently. I am not financially controlled by my career.
Mm-hmm.
I control my career. So I can say things that most people can't because they're worried about their job. No, that's not how my mama raised me. And she raised me as she was my mother first until I was an adult. She became my friend later in life. And when you have that sort of temperament, it puts you in a position that a lot of people hate you for it, because I've not sold my soul to anybody. I still own it. So I can be quite honest. So now's your time.
Okay.
To get the honesty out of me.
Oh, crack in the neck.
Okay.
Ooh, ooh. Ready.
Say, for an example,
mm-hmm.
someone has been told, maybe you should try drag just to see if you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see, because they see maybe some potential, some like dormant spark that once ignited will shine and, you know, bring them to a new level in life.
Shine bright like a diamond. Oh.
Say that. Little black gay boy who was born in New York and then moved to the South is sitting right in front of you tonight. Where would you tell them to get started? What's the first thing they should do?
Now be careful. You might restart Dita Ritz's drag career.
I am not Dita Ritz! So what? We have the same goddamn cadence. She is fierce. I really like her.
You know.
She can pound the runway, you know, but I am not Dita Ritz.
We're going to get her on here.
Good luck.
I actually would say this is an easy business to get into, which is very odd after this whole discussion. But you've got to want to do this. Like every other job, goal, vision in life, you've got to have the passion because it's almost like a decathlon. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be easy. You're going to get your feelings hurt. You're going to, and that's the process. No one's pretty when they first started. I love this Throwback Thursdays where I was able to put up my picture of what I first looked like. I put up bad pictures of me. I've always had them and I've always stood behind them because every step of the way I've looked at myself and went, ooh, I looked gorgeous. A year later, I went, ooh, I thought that was gorgeous. Even to this day, I look at myself and go, what can I change? Because I know what I thought I looked like when it was good and then knew later I was wrong. I say that about me now. Every time I put on a face, I go, is this worthy? What can I change? Because we are, it is a superficial business. It's illusion. And if you're going to want to enter this business, embrace that. I can't even talk about people and personalities because that's corporate America. Mm-hmm. But you have to have an inner sense of you're going to start out maybe not looking like what you want to, but you got to know that every time you put on a face, you're getting better and better. And you got to do it for you, not because you want to honor somebody, not because you want someone in their memory. You got to do it because you enjoy it. Because if you don't enjoy it, go to being an accountant and just make life easier.
And if you don't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Amen.
Can I let the music play? Oh,
sometimes it's a better song one season and a shitty song the next.
Right.
This is the beginning.
I've gotten to know you to the point where
I know that's why you
for the listeners.
Y'all should be able to go for the jugular.
I can't.
But the thing is, it's you
both know you have a question you've always wanted to ask me that you thought would cross the line.
And I asked you it already.
So ask it again.
Ask on this episode. This is where the fans get to hear it.
Not even after I knew you very well. I asked you, have you ever had sex in drag?
Oh, that was a good one.
I think I asked you that fairly early, and I was like. So
I said, Brian, meet Chantel. He said, have you ever had sex with drag? Okay, that's how quick it was.
Okay, let me. That was the jugular. Okay. Honestly, I have never had sex in drag. But
there it is. There's always a button.
There's two stories with this one. There was one where I understood exactly what I was. I was doing the show at the Parliament House. It was in the disco. It must have been a talent show. And this Greek god wasn't really Greek, but he was, you know, like 6'2", and he had this curly hair and these huge muscles. And you could tell that he was a gym rat, easily power lifter. And he was all into my world. And he kept tipping me. He talked about how beautiful I was. He's like, I want to take you to dinner. I said, okay, let me just go back to the dressing room and change. I'll be right out. Now, remember, I'm naive me, and that meant getting out of drag. Mm-mm. I came out of drag, and I went to approach him. And as I was walking forward, and I opened my mouth. He's like, don't talk to me. And I looked at him and went, what? He's like, I'm waiting for someone, and it's not you. So just go away. And he kept staring at the dressing room where I came from. And he, because there's a little hallway there. You couldn't see how I came out that door. I went, okay. So I went right back into the dressing room, got my stuff. I was completely devastated. Went through the theater, went out to the front door, and left a man standing right there. Because that's when I realized he didn't want me. He wanted the aesthetic. To what I looked like. Yep. Mm-hmm. On a flip side, not to mention the gentleman's name, because he still is here in Orlando, and I'm still hoping that maybe we might meet up again. There was one gentleman who I spent Halloween with. We had met at a wedding, which was a whole nother story, which I won't share tonight. But I always thought he was very, very cute. And so we developed a friendship, and he had a little bit of a quirk to him. So we went running around Halloween one night, and he went with me to downtown and all this. And we ended up at the Parliament House and Pulse, and we'd been drinking. And then I lived two blocks from Parliament House at the time. So I knew I was okay to drive us back to the Parliament House, back to my house, not much further. We got to my house. He lit up at the airport, and I went, baby, are you going to be able to drive home? He's like, I don't know. I said, do you want to come in for some water? He's like, yeah. So I got him in the house and he's drinking water and I'm still in geesh. Well, I had to get untucked. So I took my big white robe. I got everything off. So I was just Chantel from the neck up. Had my white robe on. I can't believe I was saying this on the radio. And I looked at him and he was no condition to drive. So I sat there and said, baby, do you want to just crash here tonight? He said, yes. I said, okay. So I put him into my bed. He passed out. That's when I got out of drag. He's asleep now. We're okay. I took my wig off, took my makeup off, took my shower. I had to be at work the next day. I crawled into bed. He started trying something with me. I'm like, he's drunk. He still sees Chantel in his head. Not going to happen. So I stopped him, being an honorable person. Went to sleep. My alarm clock went up for me to go to work the next day. I fear he was sober. The sun is shining in the room. He starts at it again. At this point, there's not an ounce of Chantel on me. It's pure Robert. And of course, I look at him and go, baby, the alarm clock went off for me to go to work, not to play with you. Sent him on his way. And that entire day at work, I kept thinking to myself, I should have called in.
Should have called in. Bitch, you had points. I don't understand why you went into work.
Oh. I took care of it next Halloween. Don't worry. Okay.
What is this, a once every Halloween thing?
He was my Halloween trade for like several years. It was so funny. It would follow the same path.
What the hell?
We would go out. We would hang. And you know. And then one Halloween, we're at Pulse. And if he's listening to this, I'm still waiting for round three. He met me up. He was supposed to meet me at a house party. He got off work late. He couldn't find the house party. Then he was supposed to meet me at Pulse. Said he got lost. I said, well, babe, I'm here. I'd kind of given up on him. All of a sudden, he said, I found the place. He called me. I said, okay, I'll meet you up front. Got him inside. We sat there for 10 minutes. I looked at him and said, you know, we do this every year. Do you really want to stay here for the next 2 hours? You would just go home right now. He's like, let's go.
Yep.
Girl.
Happy Halloween to me.
Oh, my. Trick or treat.
Oh, honey, it was tricks and treat, trust.
Okay. She had a pale out and everything.
But humorously saying, he's the closest one I've ever been to within drag.
Right.
Because it started off with he had that vision in his mind when we were becoming that way, but then after a while he was just into me, so I knew with him it was more personality. But as far as that illusion, I'm not a transsexual. It is not my lifestyle, and I fear it's very dishonest for me to even try to do that when I know it's not my 24/7.
Right.
So leaves it to me.
You.
Okay, so you gave me time to think about something. So now this
must be good. He is hesitating.
Okay, well, I mean, we've known each other for a while now, and I've known a lot of stories, and we've shared a lot, especially on Monday nights for game night at the Parliament House of the Bear Den.
And Tuesdays and Thursdays for Barrioke, which I'm there every week.
I'm trying to push.
Start at 9 o'clock.
I'm trying to push the.
Come listen to me sing This Joint Is Jumping.
Which was fabulous.
It was so awesome.
Your Ain't Misbehaving tribute was fantastic.
Right up there with Deo.
Oh, yes. So. You should hear Oral do some Deo as well. Oral is
I love your
Deo.
Name, by the way. It cracks me up every time I hear it. I go, oh, Oral.
Didn't stand a chance. Out the womb.
Was that your given?
Yep.
They named you Oral.
O-R-A-L.
On the gift certificate.
Uh-huh.
Or Robert.
Birth certificate. Well, I feel like I was a gift to my parents. They're like, well, I'm just going to rip up this receipt. I don't need to take it back to the stupid market.
I love
actually,
that.
It was Bloomingdale's. I came in a little brown bag.
Oh, not even a blue box. Oh, so sorry.
One day a man is going to give me a little blue box and I will, I'm going to turn into a bitch afterward. But yes.
You afterwards?
Were, I'll take a Walmart ring right now. I just want to get married.
But you were going to say, I'm sorry.
Okay. So in our conversations, we've talked about quite a few of your romantic interests. We'll call it your romantic interests.
Yes.
So for our listeners out there, because kind of tying back to what Oral was asking before, you know, if you're thinking about getting into this lifestyle and this business, because in a lot of ways it is a business, if you're going to try to take it in that direction, how has this affected your love life? Have you come across guys that, as Robert, because I mean, you said you're not Chantel 24/7, although the persona and people do know you as that 24/7. That's not who you are as a whole. So when you go out there and you meet people and you meet them as Robert, when they get to the point where they find out that you are a drag queen, a fabulous drag queen, do they kind of take a step back and say, I can't do this? And how do you deal with that?
Now, I need you to answer very delicately because you might be strumming my pain with your fingers, singing my life with your words.
All right, Roberta Flack / Lauryn Hill, calm down. Honestly, we want honest answers here, because this is...
It's very weird. I come from a different beginning, and I say that, I don't know, out of reality or out of truth or to shield myself. August 23rd, 1991, I was working at McDonald's, where I had met my husband at the time. Very closeted relationship because it's the middle of Iowa. He was working both at McDonald's and at Perkins. And I said, honey, it's too much for you. You need to pick one or the other. It's going to, you know, it's too much. And so he gave up his job at McDonald's and just worked at Perkins. I had almost a girlfriend, like as in the sisterhood, that I hung out with. And her name was Glendette. We also used to go to Perkins to study. Half of that was so I could spend some time with him and study, hang out with my girlfriend. It was a win-win-win for me. Well, one night we were there, I'm going to say August 22nd, we were there. And he said, hey, I need you to come in tomorrow night. We need to talk about something. I said, okay. Got very excited because I didn't know what it was, but things were going good. Well, I had to leave early because I had to be at work at McDonald's the next day, August 23rd, to which I was opening. So I got there at 4:30, I was making the salads and the biscuits and all that before I had to drive through. At 6 o'clock when we open, I turn on my drive through. The phone starts ringing off the hook. And I couldn't imagine anybody calling that often, that early. It was very unusual. And I heard my girlfriend Jean, who was the manager, going, that's awful. I said, what's awful? She said, you know Corey Edwards. And I started to laugh to myself, going, do I know Corey Edwards? And her next words out of her mouth was like, he got killed in a train accident this morning, 3 hours earlier. And so he had gotten killed 3 hours before. My first response was, you know, they're trying to out me. They found out we were together, and this is the way of outing me. And I thought, that was really shitty. You give it a good 20 minutes, you realize no one's paying attention to you, and you realize it just really happened. It hits you. And I was in back booth drive through, and when it hit me that it was real and it wasn't a fake, I blanked out. I spent the next hour taking orders in that drive through. I'd worked there so much, automatic pilot between orders. They had to tell me this. I was just holding the register, just looking at the buttons, not moving. They sent Kim back to me to check on me because they said something was wrong with me. And Kim put her hand on my shoulder, and I looked at her, and I realized it was real. Ooh, weird. This many years, it still hits me. Because it was a very honest relationship. I say this in this fashion because that man loved me for who I was, and there was no pretense. So when I meet guys, and when guys talk about relationships with me, they have to know my spirit, my soul. The blessing for Chantel is a lot of guys are so superficial, and I've had a couple not want anything to do with me after they find out the fact, because Chantel is a queen, and heaven forbid your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever friend is a queen. Even if I do bowl and lift weights and enjoy sports occasionally, you know, I'm not singing show tunes in the house unless I'm prepping for karaoke. you know, I don't do that. But you get these guys out there that only want a queen because they like the feminine aspect and they want nothing to do with the boy. Or they only want the boy wanting to do the feminine aspect because it's a queen, which those people all become the people looking for the superficial. I've had the boyfriends since then who have looked past. You know, they've not fallen through. My last one, who did me very dirty because he knew about my drag career. He didn't care. He wanted to know me. We were together. And I didn't know he was seeing someone else. And then the other guy trumped me because he knew about me and pulled out all the stops, and they're together. And I found him on Facebook when he posted on Facebook his status from single to in a relationship. And all of a sudden, my rug got pulled out from underneath me.
Girl, if you need me to take care of some stuff, I know people.
I'm Gladys Knight. When she did her version of I Will Survive, she said, better to be alone than to be lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships, the intimacy of a husband is a beautiful thing. I've experienced it more than once, but it does not give me the ultimate personal value. So as much as I will enjoy Chantel and enjoy that life and enjoy men buying me drinks because they want the superficial, and now that I can see it, I will screw you out of every dollar you want to spend on me at the bar, even though I get my drinks for half price and sometimes free. If you want to pay $8 for a drink that I can get for $1.50, I'll do my part for the bar and make you spend the money, because at the end of the day, I'm still going to go home by myself. But going home by myself does not mean I'm going home alone. And that's why I embrace my friends and my family. And when that ultimate man shows up in my life, that's going to be one hell of a wedding.
Can I be the flower girl?
You might be giving me away.
Oh, I love that. I would totally
do that.
That
means there's still a chance for me.
Oh, I can see oral in a flower girl's outfit.
I've been one before.
All right.
I've caught a bouquet before.
Oh, my God.
Ooh, I was so close.
He tried to push that bitch out of the way. She clawed
him.
So I was at my girlfriend's wedding. I was doing her hair and makeup. I've got to bring it lighter because that was very heavy. But my girlfriend was getting married, and I love both her and her fiance. I love them both. They still hit Chantel up all the time. But they invited me to the wedding. I was doing her hair and did her makeup and did the bridal party. And then they said, you need to come to the show, to the wedding, in drag. So I sent them all off. I got in drag. I wear a beautiful black pantsuit. When I walked into the church, and it wasn't a church, it didn't explode. So I said, okay, everything's all right. And the ushers,
probably the Unitarians.
I knew both the ushers. So they said, which one do you want to escort you down? I said, you both going to escort me down. We're going to make this processional. So they brought me in. All the Disney folks are sitting here laughing. All the straight folks are like, oh, she's very pretty. So we do the wedding, and then we're at the reception, and they get ready to toss the bouquet. And I'm trying to be respectful at this point. I'm just sitting back. And all of a sudden, Rod, the groom, goes, wait, where the hell is Chantel? So they make me get up on this floor. I'm like, oh, this is so embarrassing. Why am I back here? I stand in the back, all the way in the back, behind everybody. Did I mention this was a Disney-type wedding, and all the girls up there play Mickey Mouse?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my four-inch heels. I'm talking, when Lourdes threw that bouquet, she threw it over everybody. All I did was reach up and grab it. And I looked at it and went, God damn it. Now that boy's got to put the garter on me. I did not let the 18-year-old put the garter on me, though. But I sure did have that bouquet.
Oh. He'd have had a little surprise when he put the garter on.
Sad, no. He would have had to reread the book Where the Wild Things Are with a whole different view.
Chantel, thank you so much for making this the penultimate episode.
Penultimate. This is
Dragon.
We can only go down from here, I think.
That was phenomenal. I felt my spirit has been rejuvenated and renewed. I have gotten to see like the inner workings of the pageant world. And then we got some dirt on Orlando as a drag scene. Like, I am fully satiated.
So it ticked all your boxes, is what you're saying.
You may have started a drag career here.
I'm scared of what this playback is going to be like.
I can't wait for Dita Ritz to come back.
I can't wait to tweet her and say that.
You know,
we're ready for her.
I will say the closest I have ever come to drag is walking in heels. Now, I wasn't fantastic, but I had a natural talent for it. I was really surprised.
Girl, it takes more than that, because trust me, in those boots with the heels that I had some natural talent in that. I ran upstairs in that shit, up and down those stairs at karaoke.
No offense, hon. I've never seen you run a day in your life.
You clear karaoke more often than you might.
Exactly. If you would see what I'm trying to schmooze.
Hardest working man in show business.
Which karaoke?
The one at Stonewall.
The one
at
Coach.
No, and with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for joining us for Drag is the New Spandex. I'm your host, Oral, and I'm not going to let these bitches shade me. Chantel Roche, thank you so much for joining us.
It has been a complete drunken pleasure.
Okay. And with that, everyone, good night.